Don't criticize. And we talked about there's a difference between criticizing and a complaint, right? And we even practice the right way to complain, right? I feel neglected when you don't empty the dishwasher. Please empty the dishwasher tonight, right? Remember that? Okay. And one of our spouses just hugged their spouse, and apparently they've been practicing that. That's awesome. Okay. So we did two do's, one don't. We're going to come with the same plan. Last week, we spent a lot of chunk of the time on the message on how marriage is a symbol of the relationship between Christ and the church. So I'm not going to do all of that again because we had that last week. But just in case you missed last week, the idea was this, is that we look at marriage as just our spouse, right? You know, you and her, or he and you. But God looks at it a little bit different. He's like, your marriage is a symbol of my relationship between the Son, Jesus, and the church. It gives it a whole different dynamic. And especially if you think about it, that if that's how God views marriage, he's had that idea long before Christ even came to the earth, right? It's been all part of his plan. So this is a big deal, okay? It's a much bigger deal than just you and your spouse. And so, but because marriage is a symbol of relationship between Christ and the church, we can look to see how Jesus interacts with people to discover how to relate to other people. We can follow his example in our marriage or in our relationships. And if you happen to be here today and you're not married, it's okay. These principles apply to your relationship with your kids, your friends, your church, your coworkers. And so these are relationship skills, okay? And I'll probably use an example about me and my boys later on today if that's where we go, okay? So that's our guiding principle. Marriage is a symbol of the relationship between Christ and the church, and therefore, throughout the series, we're looking at things that Jesus did with people that we can duplicate and replicate in our relationships. So here is this week's do, okay? This week's do. And I have to kind of explain it, but it says, this is it. Look for and turn toward your spouse's bids toward you. That's like an odd phrase. Your spouse's bids toward you. And I debated this word bids a couple of different times. But here's how, we're just going to work with it, okay? And there's a reason behind it. This is going to be odd because we're in a church, but sometimes if you're playing poker, okay, you're playing cards, right? You have an ante, right? Right? I was going to take a show of hands. Who plays poker? But never mind. Okay, great. We're all in it. Okay. So we're closet poker players. Okay. So what, people ask me, what kind of church do you go to? I'm like, we're Southern Baptist, but we don't know it. Okay. So, but the idea is this, you ante up, okay? And so you kind of put your chips or your cash or your Skittles, whatever you're using, right? And if you're a Baptist, you use Skittles. But so you ante up, and what that means is the dealer knows to give you some cards, right? It's like, you know, pay attention to me, I'm in this game. Do you follow? Okay. So I was tempted to use like your spouse's like request or calls, but a lot of times our bids aren't that obvious, okay? So we're looking for and turning toward our spouse's bids towards you. So what is a bid? It's a request, we'll call it, for attention, support, affection, humor. But you're wanting your spouse to kind of engage you a little bit, okay? But they're not always like formal announcements. So like if Michelle wants Pat to pay attention to her, she might, because you know Michelle can be just tell you how it is, and which probably makes it easy for Pat. But it's possible that she could be sitting there on a Saturday morning for breakfast, and Pat's all getting ready to go out to Cars and Coffee, and she might go, she's sitting there, and she'll, like, sigh. I'm going to have to go get milk today. That is a bid, okay? Now, it depends on where Pat is mentally at that moment. But he could be thinking all kinds of thoughts, okay? Like, he could be thinking, I adore my Michelle. Like, I don't know what his nickname is for Michelle, okay? But I adore my love muffin, and I will go grab milk for her, okay? I don't know, okay? I've never wanted to know what Pat calls Michelle, okay? What Michelle calls Pat, okay? But they probably have some codes for each other, right? And so it's a bid. Or he could be thinking, I'm spending time with my oldest son at the car show. You go get the milk, right? He could be thinking that, right? Or he could be thinking, hey, I will grab the milk after the car show, right? So Michelle's, her sigh and her just like exclaiming, she didn't say, Pat, I have to go get milk today, right? But it was just like, I got to go get milk. And so sometimes our bids for information or for attention are really, they're kind of subtle or covert, right? And so we're looking at these bids. And so this happens a lot. So even like, you know, my kids probably get tired of this, but sometimes I'll be at home and I'll be like, I'm so tired and I have so much to do, okay? Theoretically, my boys might go, you know, I could help out. That could happen. And theoretically. No, actually, the other day I said that, I came home and the dishwasher was empty. I know, okay? So that song we sang about that miracles, what was the song? The Lincoln Bridge. Miracles take time. I know. 16 years, baby. So so they empty them other times too. But I'm telling you, it made my evening. I'm like, dude, my kids paid attention. We're like, you know, I parented. I'm doing good. So, but it's a bid. So I just shared that and they heard it and they responded about me asking and it was awesome. And I probably told, adding you, whatever group this is, I probably told like 20 other people outside this group, okay? It almost went on Facebook. I was so excited. Okay. So it's a bid. We do this. Sometimes we'll be more direct. Sometimes it's like a subtle, okay? And we make these bids for our spouse's attention because we really want them to know that we want to know that they're there for us, that they care for us, right? So another example could be like you're going to the grocery store and your spouse, you're just trucking along to the grocery store and your spouse goes, do we need to get more cereal? Right? And one response, if you totally miss the bid, you're like, I don't know. That's happened, right? I don't know. And that's a possibility. That's a response. But if the person, your spouse goes, you know what? I don't know. I'll go grab a box. Do you see how it's a little different? Right? So the, I don't know, doesn't communicate a lot of connection, right? And it doesn't show that you're like there with them in the moment. Like you care about the conversation. So we're looking at bids. So what does the Bible say about this? So 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, we call it. It says this, love, it does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That last sentence, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. You can't do that if you're not aware of people's bids. If your spouse says, you know, I'm so tired, I got so much to do. You can't bear with them and help them with that if you're not paying attention, right? And you can't hope with them unless you know what their hopes are. And so this is extremely important that we catch this idea that if we're going to love somebody, we actually have to like pay attention to their bids. Philippians 2, and this is so important, and I use this verse all the time. It's one of my favorite. It says this, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, so you know, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Check this out. The Bible is telling us, don't just look at what's interesting to you, but look at what's interesting to other people, right? Look at the other person's interests. So we're supposed to be looking to the interests of others, which means we turn to the bids of our partner or our spouse. And the passage goes on, and it shows this example of Christ, where Christ saw our sin. It's really a cry, you know, we need help with that. And he responds to that and he comes down and he dies on the cross for us. And he raised from the dead. We have life. He gets to go to the Father. And all of this brings glory and praise to God. And that's the passage. And so we're following his example of sacrificing for that other person like Jesus is, okay? But how does Jesus do this? Does Jesus respond to the bids of people? And so I was looking through the New Testament. I started in Matthew. I was on Bible Gateway. And I literally went like, hit the arrow chapter by chapter. Oh, that applies. Next chapter, that applies. And so here's a couple of things. And then I went to some of the Gospels too. But when Jesus saw the needs of people worn out by life, it says that he was empathetic and he cared for them. He saw their needs. So we don't know if they were sighing, you know, oh, I'm so tired. But he saw their needs. Matthew 9:36 says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. They're confused. And he had compassion on them. When the disciples made a bid by asking for clarification about what Jesus said, he responded and he cleared up the confusion. He taught them stuff. Matthew 14 says he was actually trying to get away from crowd, and he saw a crowd show up. He's on the boat, and he saw this crowd show up. And Matthew 14 says, when he went ashore, He saw a great crowd and had compassion on them and healed their sick. These people are like following him around, just looking for attention from Jesus. And he tries to get away sometimes just to rest, and they follow him around, and he has compassion and he heals them and he meets them where they're at. Later on that same chapter, it says this: but when the disciples saw him walk on the sea, so he's one night, he tells the guys, hey, go out in the boat. He wants some alone time. And he actually walks out on the water to catch up with his guys, right? And it says here in verse 14, when the disciples saw him walk in the sea, they were terrified and said, it is a ghost. And they cried out in fear. So they're crying out in fear. It's a bid. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, take heart. It is I. Don't be afraid. Luke 18 says this, verse 15 and 16. Now they were bringing even infants to him that he might touch them. Did you get this? These parents wanted their kids to have some attention with Jesus. They wanted Jesus to touch them, you know, maybe bless them. And when the disciples saw it, they rebuked them. These disciples, like, Jesus is too important to be spending time with your kids, right? But Jesus called them and said, let the children come to me and do not hinder them, for such belongs the kingdom of God. And so he's like, no, bring the kids to me. They're all sitting on his lap. You know, he's probably getting a little nuggies or whatever. But he's loving on these kids. So what I want you to see here is this. When people make bids for Jesus' attention, he responds. It's like when we pray to Jesus, right? We have confidence that he's listening to us. He's aware. He's not like, you know, I've heard enough from you, Jeff. You know, you're a broken record. You ask for the same thing every time. You know, he doesn't do that. He's engaged in the conversation, and he responds to our bids. So he is our example. So turning toward our partner's bids creates a loving foundation for our relationship. So here's the thing. Last week we talked about, the base layer was getting to know your spouse's world, a love map. So foundation number one. On top of that is fondness and admiration, okay? This one, next one is responding to the bids of your spouse. And here's why it's important. Because you're going to have some rough times, okay? Is marriage ever difficult? Is life difficult, okay? It's going to be difficult, okay? And so I remember a long time ago, I had this in my premarital sessions. A lot of times I warned them, marriage is hard, okay? It's going to be hard. I don't do this in the first session. I don't want to freak out. But I'm like, it's going to be hard, and you'll survive. It's going to be hard, though. Don't be surprised. And I tell them that. So like in year three or four, when it's hard, they don't go, oh, my gosh, I've married the wrong person. What I want them to know is, oh, my gosh, Jeff is brilliant. Marriage is hard. And so it kind of like diffuses the situation. And so it's going to be hard. Things are going to happen. You're going to lose a job. You're going to get sick. Something's going to happen. You're going to discover that your spouse is not perfect. Or they're not even close to perfect. Whatever the case may be, right? And you're going to discover this. But if you have like this firm foundation of, I know my spouse's world, and I am fond of him or her, even though he or she's not perfect, and that person goes, and that person knows they respond to my bids. You have like this strong foundation that helps you get through the tough times. We can't eliminate the tough times, okay? But what we can do is build a foundation strong enough to stand through the tough times. So this is what we're doing here. So we're looking at responding to these bids. So here we go. These many moments of bidding for a partner's attention are crucial to relationship trust and romance. Yeah, it affects romance too. Okay? These mini moments. And so what happens a lot of times, you're sitting there, you're watching a football game, and your spouse, could we just go, the wife would just say, I know stereotypical, but just work with me. You're watching a football game, and your wife starts talking to you, and she starts talking about something she's concerned about at work. This is a bid. Right, she would like some understanding, or she might want some comfort. She might want you kind of laugh about the struggles at work or whatever. But if you know she's like, yeah, I have to go to work tomorrow. I'm really stressed out. My coworker's annoying me. And you're watching football, and you're like, okay, honey. Does that sound like he heard and responded to the bid? No, it kind of sounds like the game is on. What are you doing talking to me? Right? Right? And I use this example because I kind of like my football time to be football time. Okay, so I'm using an example that is for me. Okay, so I'm not blaming you. It's something like, you know, We do not have serious conversation during football games. Okay, so for me. So I'm using an example here, but the idea is this, is if we don't respond to the bid, what happens? She's like, she may not say this, but it feels like he's not really with me in this. She won't make the conclusion that he doesn't love me, but if these bids over and over and over and over again are ignored, at some point in time it feels like I have a roommate and not a spouse. Right? And so these many moments of bidding for a partner's attention are crucial, okay? So a lot of times we think of this. We think, well, ignore the little stuff and we'll just make it up on a big vacation. Okay, we'll go to the Bahamas for 2 weeks and we'll rekindle our relationship. The studies show that the little bids ongoing are way more effective than the vacation. In fact, you could have, if you do poorly at the bids, you could take a vacation and discover that you spent 15 grand on a Bahamas vacation and you're there with somebody who doesn't like you. Okay? And so these bids are way more important, okay, than the others. So here's, the study showed this. So I'm kind of marrying some biblical principles with some other stuff I've studied, okay? And so I'm taking this from a guy named John Gottman. He's well known in this field, and he has this thing called a love lab, and he literally watches people interact. Okay, they have like a little apartment set up, and they film it, and they just watch the interaction. They start counting. Okay, so like if Michelle and Pat were doing that little exchange about the milk, they would go, "Pat failed bid," "Notch failed bid," right? Or Pat, you know, did the bid, right? And they would keep track of all this stuff. And here's what they found: that these couples that one study found that couples who had remained married, the ones that remained married after 6 years, turned toward each other's bids an average of 86% of the time. So they got married. If they were married 6 years later, the studies showed that those people turned toward each other's bids 86% of the time. Of the couples that divorced within 6 years, they only turned each other's bids 33% of the time. Isn't that interesting? So this is what they found, is these bids are extremely important because they're daily reminders that your spouse is with you, that the spouse cares for you, the spouse is in this with you, okay? Secondly, turning to each other's bids develops positive momentum. So you could be in a bad relationship right now, okay, and you're thinking, when are these miracles going to happen? It takes time, like we sang, right? You could be in a bad relationship, but turning to each other's bids actually begins to make things healthier right away, okay? Not like perfect, okay? But what happens is this. He responds to the bid, okay? So we'll pick a new couple because I picked on Pat and Michelle enough. So we're going to go with, Andrew and Amber, okay? So we'll go with Andrew and Amber. Amber's my laugh track. So we're with Andrew and Amber. And let's say they're kind of having some tense moments. Year two? We're in year two right now, right? So we're in year two. And so Amber's discovered Andrew's not perfect. And we're like, we know. And so she discovered this, but so there's some tension, okay? But let's say that she's like, I don't know. I'm so stressed. You have a pet, don't you? Actually, it's not really a pet. It's a reptile, isn't it?
We have a dog.
We have a dog? Okay, good. We'll go with the dog. Okay. So I don't like that lizard thing. So she goes, I'm so stressed out, and I'm busy, and we got to give the dog a bath. And that word "we" is, you know, we is code for not we, right? So Andrew's like, he's like, you know what? I can wash the dog. I'll wash the dog this day. You know, even though you promised to wash the dog, you know, this is going to be your thing. We get the dog if you wash the dog, but I'll wash the dog. Okay. And what happens is Amber's like, he heard me. Okay. And she's like, you know, he's kind of cool. He's a keeper. Really? Oh, okay. Well, I have the gift of prophecy. So he does this, and she's like, you know, he's kind of a good guy. I kind of like him. I'll keep him, right? And he gets a positive moment, okay? And so what happens is it changes her perspective, okay? And then, because we know Amber, it's probably expressed on her face that she's happy, right? Because that's what she does. And so Andrew goes, he looks over, he's washing Fido or whatever, you know, and he looks over and she's like, she's smiling at me. She likes me. Okay. And what happens is this builds positive momentum, and you could be in a complicated marriage. Okay. It could be really a tough time, but you start responding to little bids and you make progress. Okay. It changes the environment. So kind of going back to that grocery illustration, if the wife goes, or the husband goes, do we have cereal? And the wife goes, I don't know. I'll go grab something. Okay. The husband goes, she paid attention. She was off her cell phone long enough to pay attention to me, and she answered it. And actually, the household stuff is an us thing. We're doing this together. And so it creates positive momentum. If she just shrugged her shoulder and goes, I don't know, then guess what? No momentum, right? Okay. Next thing. If we're going to do this, we have to eliminate the distractions so the bids can be received. Okay, I've got two categories of distractions. One is on the person who makes the bid. One is on the person who receives the bid. So we have to eliminate the distractions so the bids can be received. We're going to go back to the dog washing thing. There's a good chance that Amber wasn't going, you know, I would really like Andrew to show me that he cares by washing the dog. I'm going to guess that she didn't have that entire thought process. What she thought was, I'm tired, I don't wash the dog, and I have a husband. Okay, something along those lines, right? And so we have to kind of, but sometimes, I'll just say this, negative emotion can be a distraction. Okay, so I was not there, okay, and you don't have to out yourselves on this one, but let's say Amber, it was like this. I hate our dog, you never wash the dog, would you please stop being lazy and wash the flipping dog, okay? Now, that may not happen. Did you guys boo me? Okay, so that may not happen. But there's a good chance that Andrew did not go, that's a bid from the woman I love. Okay, what he thought was, oh, I wish I was working overtime today, right? That's probably what happened. And so what happens, though, if we're in a complicated relationship, things are not going smoothly, our bids for attention, our bids for help, our bids for our spouse to be there with us, they can be covered in negative emotion, and it's not received, okay? It is not received. So this kind of goes back to our how we do a complaint. Do you remember? I feel this when you do this type thing, right? And so we're not going to criticize. We're not making a character statement. We're not destroying their character. So none of us are perfect, but we're trying to remove the negativity from our bids. So you could be a spouse who's always like trying to get your spouse engaged, and you're like, how come he or she doesn't respond to me? I'm constantly asking for his attention or her attention. And it could be that your bids are just full of negative emotion, anger or sadness or blame or something, that your spouse just gets dust back and gets defensive. Okay? And so we want to really eliminate those. Yeah. So, but it's hard. I was thinking of an example, and I think I'll go there. I was in a relationship one time where she said, well, if you're feeling needy, just tell me. Here was my thought process. I'm a man. Needy? No. Okay? And no, I am. Possibly. We'll take that out of the podcast. But the idea of, and the response was, just tell me if you need something from me, if you're needy. That was so hard to hear, by the way. And it would be much easier to say, if you have a need, I can handle that one much better than being needy. But she said, if you just need, you know, if you're feeling needy, just tell me. And what she was asking was just be clear, communicate the bid simply, right? It just was not in terms that I, in my fragile male ego could handle, okay? So, but the request was just communicate it plainly, okay? So we need to remove the negative emotion that can be a distraction from our bid. Then on the receiver side, let's just be honest, you guys, the digital world can be a distraction. And it can be, okay? I have a good friend of mine that his cell phone is just like, attached to his brain. I'm like, my goodness. And like, hey, you want to go to lunch? Okay, I go to lunch. And they're like this the entire time. They're like, and I'm talking, you know, and I'm like, you know, and I test it out. You know, like I went on a run, no response. I'm dating again, response. Just proposed, no response. I'm like, hello, I died, you know. And so sometimes what happens is that we get so tuned in that we're missing the bids. Your spouse has to text you. I am bidding for your attention. Please put the phone down, right? And so the digital world can be a distraction. So it's, you know, your cell phone, your email, social media. And we actually sometimes, let's be honest, sometimes we pay more attention to our media likes than our bids from our spouse. Okay, and we're concerned, like, hey, that post got 67 likes, you know, and we're all excited about it. But the thing is this, you guys, undivided attention is really powerful. When you like, literally, I'm going to shut my phone off so I can hear you. That just communicates a ton, right? And so the digital world can be a total distraction. Okay, the next thing. Notice and thank your partner when he or she responds to your bid. So we're going to go back to the dog washing thing. Amber made a very nice, kind bid, and Andrew responded because he loves Amber and he likes Fido, and he washes the dog. And Amber then should notice that, and she can encourage the partner by saying, "Hey, I appreciate that. That meant a lot to me. I feel loved when you did this, right?" And so what happens is this: when you start looking for these bids, you begin to say, "Hey, my partner actually answers more bids than I realize." Okay, studies have shown that people actually answer more bids than their spouse gives them credit for. So the idea here is just to pay attention to the bids your spouse responds to them, and then look for how your spouse responds to you. Okay, I think I'm going long today. Next thing here, practical exercise for the week. I'm going to give it to you. We're going to run down it quickly. It's online if you want it. Password is marriage. Okay, but I encourage you guys to practice having a daily stress-reducing conversation. A daily stress-reducing conversation. It could be like if you're, you know, over the phone or at dinner time or before you go to bed or whatever. But it's a simple process. It helps you kind of connect, and it actually almost opens up a time for you guys to bid for each other's attention. So here we go. And they're not on the PowerPoint, but they're on the website if you want them. Or you can write them down. Take turns. Each of you gets a chance to talk. If you're like a big talker and you've got like 1,000 words, narrow it down so your small talker has a chance, okay? So take turns. You might even put a timer on it if necessary, right? Show genuine interest. So when it's your turn to listen, you're paying attention. You're not waiting for your turn to talk, okay? You're actually paying attention. So show genuine interest. Don't give unsolicited advice. Okay, so this is not the time, as your spouse is talking about the pressures at work, for you to go, you know, if you showed up early at work, it'd be okay. You know, that's not good. Okay, so do not give unsolicited advice. If your spouse goes, "Hey, I want to know what you think," you might clarify, "Do you want me to give you advice? Sounds like you do." So I would tread slowly. Okay, make sure that's a request for advice. But and then if they say yes, then yes. But you're taking turns, you're showing interest, that you don't give unwanted advice, and your goal is communicating understanding. Okay, so you're having this conversation, and so Dustin and Regina are home cooking a meal, they're doing something, some meal thing, and they're talking, this is their decompression conversation, and Regina's talking about her work time, and so Dustin's job is to communicate understanding. He's like, so what you're saying, Regina, is like there's a lot of pressure on you at work right now, and you're feeling kind of overwhelmed? She's like, yeah. Okay, so she's feeling heard. So we're communicating understanding. Then you want to support your spouse. Once again, this is not the chance to give advice. This is not, like, do not think this. Hey, she's finally talking to me. I'm going to tell her how to fix her life. That is not what we're doing here, okay? So we're supporting our spouse. Don't give advice or say it's your fault, even if it is. Our spouses are not perfect. They may have made a mistake at work. This is not the chance to say, you're right, it was your fault, okay? It might be the truth, but we'll save it because timing is everything, okay? Proverbs says, a word fitly spoken, like fit at the right time, is like apples of gold in a setting of silver, okay? So this is the time to support your spouse, not to like figure it out and place blame. The goal is to reduce stress and connect, okay? Then you express a we against others attitude. So you want your spouse to know that we're in this together, okay? So like let's say this probably never happens because this person is perfect in my eyes, but let's just possibly say that Lillian aggravates John, okay? And we know this is totally fictitious because you're perfect, okay? but let's say John and Tanya are having like their daily stress-reducing conversation in the bedroom, and John's like, I don't understand Lillian. I got her when she was 12, but she's like a teenager, and she is a mystery, and she's driving me nuts, okay? This is Tanya's moment to go, John, I love you. I know. We're in this together. We will figure this out. It'll be us against them, for them, okay? And so, but this is a chance where they connect together. This is not Tanya's chance to go, well, you know, John, you are kind of impatient with her. You give tons of grace to the son, but you ignore Lillian, right? Garrett. Okay, sorry, Garrett. And the son, it works too. And I just drew a blank. I was thinking Brian. Okay, so the idea here is this. This is the moment, not to solve the problem, this is the moment that we support each other. We are in this together, right, guys? It's like, we, parents, we will unite together to fix child. Okay, so, well, that's not exactly right, but you know what I mean. Okay, so... Can I warn you, this is not the chance to plan a course of action, okay? So, like, let's say your spouse talks about work. You're like, I hate my boss. I hate my best friend totally started gossiping about me, and she goes to my church, and she drives me nuts. This is not the chance to go, they are evil. We will not talk to them anymore, and set a game plan, okay? Sometimes your spouse just needs to, like, let out the stuff, okay? So we express a we in it together, but we may not plan a course of action in the heat of the moment. Does that make sense? Okay? So Tanya's like, John, we're in this together, and teenage years are challenging, but we will not ground her till she's 25 today. Right? Okay. Then we show some affection. It could be touch or words. Husbands, this may not be the chance to put the moves on, okay? But we're expressing some touch and some words, okay? And we're validating emotions. So this is all on the resource online, okay? The idea here is this, is you want your spouse to know you're a safe person to go to and that you're going to listen to them and that you're going to respond. And this will actually help make the whole responding to bids easier because you're learning to listen to your spouse, right? And you're beginning to notice, oh, that's probably why you wanted me to wash the dog. Or, oh, that's why. Okay, and we're starting to connect the dots. Okay. We're going to start this. We'll finish it up next week. But here's our don't. We did our to-dos. Here's our don't. Don't begin a conversation with a harsh startup. Proverbs 29:11 says this, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man gently holds it back. Proverbs 12:18 says, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. So I used that example earlier when Amber just went off on Andrew about the dog. Remember, I got loud and I blamed and I called names and all stuff. Remember that? That's a harsh startup. Okay? A harsh startup is not going to invite your spouse or your friend or your coworker to respond to your bid. It kind of goes back to that negativity thing. So we want to avoid the harsh startup. A lot of times this happens in relationships where we kind of have this ongoing animosity and we just lost it. We're like, my patience is so thin. You're on my last nerve. And something happens and we just explode. I'll tell you, when we have a harsh startup, conversation usually just stops. Okay, when you have a harsh startup, the response is usually to defend yourself. So like when Amber went off on Andrew about the dog and you never watched the dog and it's your dog, da, 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 and she went off on him, his response, if he was human at that moment, would have been to step back and explain to her how she's wrong or how he has watched the dog back in like 1998, I washed the dog one time, right? And so we can find a hole in the argument. We defend ourselves, or we try to reflect back, and we blame, or we find something else that's wrong in somebody else, and we don't get good communication. And so we really want to start with a soft startup. You follow? So teenagers, this works with your parents too, okay? So kind of role play. You want to go to the high school dance, right? And you know it's going to be a fight with your mom or dad or whatever the case is, right? And you show up and you're like, Mom, I'd like to go to the high school dance. And she's like, no. Okay. You have a couple options here. You could say, Mom, it's really important to me. Can we please talk about it? Can you just hear me out? It's a slow startup, isn't it? I respect you. I love you. Can we talk about that? That's a slow startup. If you start off like this, what? You never let me do anything. And you start going off and you start comparing your mom to the neighbor's mom. We've been there, right? I've done it. You know, I remember I asked my dad if I can go to the beach one year. I'll never forget this. He's like, no. I'm like, why can't it? It's July 4th weekend. And this was his response. I kid you not. He's like, because I want to go to the beach. And his response was, I couldn't because every other son was going to be at the beach. And I'm like, if everybody's going to be at the beach, that's why I should be at the beach, right? But his response was the exact opposite. And so when I got upset, did that help my cause? No. Okay. So this soft startup invites the other person into the conversation without them getting defensive.